Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. It's been a little while, but we're back. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, of course, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hey, Tim, happy midweek to you.
Yes, it's very odd, Jason. Why are we not doing... I know why we're not doing Fridays. We were both busy.
Yeah, we're wedging this in because I just got back from an 11-day road trip, and you are headed off somewhere. So this was like the only time we could do it. So we're here. Hey, we did it. We made it work.
Yeah, we did it. We wedged it in. It's
That's
a wedgie.
Right. It's a summer wedge.
Summer. Wow. Okay,
yeah,
summer wedge.
It's the summer wedge. This episode is our traditional summer wedge. Everybody just go back, check the tape.
You know, whenever that's on the menu, the traditional summer wedge, it's really hard to pass that one up.
Oh, I know. It's crisp,
it's a good
and
one.
Refreshing, the summer wedge. You know, a little balsamic dressing on it. It's lovely. So much to talk about.
Yeah, so much.
Why are we talking about this? let's talk about something else. You have written many things since we last spoke almost 2 weeks ago, and we should probably get into it. First off, I think most importantly, a Power Rankings update. Your third Power Rankings piece posted while I was gone, which is pretty much genius, I have to say, in the way that it is literally a list of... It's your to-do list. It's a list of shows that you would like to watch but haven't, because that is what the world wants from a TV critic. It's a list of shows they haven't seen. Brilliant. Just
you
brilliant.
Know what? This has... I love this one because it has touched a nerve. Other people, Mike Schneider from IndieWire just tweeted out something that this made him feel good for not being so far behind, and that yet also continually filled with dread at all the new shows on here. But I felt like this was it's sort of an honest representation of peak TV, also very meta. And also kind of funny that it's based on that the actual ranking is based on urgency. So Glow is number one because that's the one I want to see the most right now.
Yeah, sure. It's at the top of your list, top of your stack.
Yeah.
That'll be the first one.
And then just the weird part of sadistic me thinks it's funny that like, what is like, you know, there's 19 of these suckers. So when you're down at 17 with Goliath, you're thinking, really? We're the 17th most likely show for he needs to watch? What is happening?
It's not good, right? Like not a good chance that it's number 19 is going to make it.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. Yeah. I do want to watch all these. That's why I put them there. But that's great because it'll create some flux, because at some point I'm going to say, you know what? Nah, a couple of these I'm going to watch and they won't be able to make the list again. And then I'm going to have to come to Jesus on a couple of those ones.
Right. Then when you refresh this, it's going to be new stuff on, and there's going to be stuff where you're declaring bankruptcy and you're like, just forget it. I just love how you have weaponized your ignorance here.
It is, right.
It's like, you know, I can write an article about shows I haven't seen. That's how I can do it. That's brilliant. That is a very clever concept. And you know, I think it speaks to the times of confusion we live in, as you know, we talk about here. It's, you know, you've got a list of almost 20 shows that you, a professional TV critic, cannot get around to watching and think might be worth watching. That says it all to me.
That says a lot. And so it's been, again, that's my favorite one. It's been fun. The two previous ones were kind of the essential comedies and dramas. And I'm thinking that the one that I'm going to do for this week, because this has been in my trial phase, is I'm going to rank channels and cable channels and networks by the order of their importance based on what they have in their arsenal.
I'm sure that won't cause any trouble at all.
It's just endearing myself to people one Power Rankings at a time.
No, well, that's why they're there. I mean, the great thing about this is actually, instead of the old Power Rankings where you just had the shows going up and down the charts, this, with these different lists, you can offend different people every week.
Absolutely. It's an equal opportunity offender.
Right. You might think, you look at a list of comedies and you're like, whew, I'm safe. And then they rank your channel the next week. And you're like, oh, no.
Yeah. Wait till we get to the executives. And yeah, I've been thinking about all kinds of things that would work on this, because I love the idea. I mean, you basically are responsible for this. Let's not kid each other. You're the one who, like, you goaded me from the outside to come up with refreshed ideas. This is what has happened, Jason. This is
what
your
have I
problem.
Done? What have I done? I apologize to all.
And it's created this situation where I have to like really think hard about, like, I come up with ideas that I'm like, okay, that's a that's kind of just like one list that might be good for like a critic's notebook, but like it has to be something that you, there can be some churn in.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the fun part is that people are like, you know, totally going with it, that you can like spin off these things for four or five or six of these, and then finally come back to like that drama one, which gives people the chance to catch up. But it makes you think though, because this thing about ranking channels, I was like, okay, well, you know, you could say what I want this on HBO because this is what I used to write things about them not having things in the pipeline,
right?
But that doesn't really apply anymore because they have HBO Go, and so their whole catalog is online. So if you because of the streamers and the Netflix philosophy, you basically have to say I value this channel or this streamer based on everything it has in its vault historically, if I can get to it, right? I think that's right. The only way to do it. You can't say, I mean, you could say, what do you have now? But it would be so hard to track Netflix because Netflix could say, well, that show that you have that we introduced 9 months ago is technically still in play. So it's tough. So I think I'm going to go what everybody has in their vault, and then we'll see.
Yeah, well, I think that's important. At the same time, though, if HBO is in a period of a few months where there's nothing really exciting that they're airing, they got to get marked down for that. Like,
exactly,
you know, that that's where it they've got their investment in their catalog, but they still have to, you know, provide you some stronger current reasons too. So I would think that's a little mixture there. That's very interesting.
Gonna have to be some clever workarounds in the writing for explanations.
Yeah,
yep. Never lack that. I always say, and everyone, it's so much science goes into this.
Oh yeah, I know. It's all, well, I mean, look, the numbers never lie. And
the numbers never lie.
That's what it comes Absolutely. Down to here is it all makes sense.
Yes. Exactly.
When you do the math. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So fun.
We should talk. You watched The Defenders and wrote a review of it. Marvel's The Defenders, the culmination, the capstone of this initial Netflix on Marvel thing. Back in the days when like Marvel doing TV shows was rare, as opposed to now where it has suddenly become common and there's a flood of them on all sorts of channels. But the Netflix ones were there pretty early on after the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. thing. They went and they made this deal to do Jessica Jones and Daredevil and Luke Cage and Iron Fist and then have it culminate in The Defenders. That was always the plan. And so, you know, they ended up doing a second season of Daredevil, which was, I think, a surprise to them because Daredevil was so successful off the bat. And now they've got Defenders. So I watched the first episode of The Defenders last night. I'm curious how you're not as deep down into this stuff as I am. So how did you take it?
Well, yeah, I think I liked it better than I thought I was going to like it probably. And yeah, the obvious one is that Iron Fist is the weak link. I think they get to the point towards the end of the third episode and certainly most of the fourth where they cover up, I think, the weakness in that character because they're kind of like spoofing on him and making fun of him. And he also is leaning into the more of the like, my backstory is kind of goofy on this rich guy, blah, 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 but I can do things too. And you know what I mean? Like they're mocking his powers, given that he's this white guy, and that he's this billionaire. So, I think that worked a little bit better, but when they had those guys alone by themselves, the difference in the writing, it's just so cartoony and stunted. Whereas Jessica Jones and Luke Cage it just works better. And I actually thought that Daredevil worked better in concept with the other characters.
Hmm. Just to give them some contrast with them.
Yeah, I think that they do a little bit of moping around in the first two episodes for everybody because they have to revisit everybody's story in case you haven't seen any of the four things. So they have the whole Matt Murdock character moping about, like, should he or shouldn't he not put the suit on kind of thing? Should he not come to people's aid? Blah, blah, blah. There's a little bit of probably too much of that. But by the third and fourth episode, it becomes really fun. I think that's all you really want in the series. Of getting them to actually, once they get together, it's just a lot of fun. So I like that part.
Yeah, my criticism of the first episode, which is all I've seen so far, is exactly that, which is I feel like they really needed, they wanted, they didn't need to, this is my problem. They really wanted to give you long update on like where you saw them last. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of Daredevil where it's what's Matt doing now and what's his law practice like and where is Karen and what's their relationship like, and then we see with Jessica Jones, it's like Jessica and her friend, and they're talking, and then we see Luke Cage, we have to see him get back out of prison and go back to Harlem because we just saw him get sent off to prison to fulfill his sentence, or until he could get released because he didn't need to be in prison after all of that. Like, there's a lot of that, like we're watching the episode after the season finale. It's like a little bonus episode of the old shows just to pull them together, other than Iron Fist, where it's like Iron Fist is running around and people are getting stabbed and he's on a plane and whatever, because nobody cares, because that was just the latest show. We just saw what happened to Iron Fist. So it slows it way down, and I can appreciate it on one level of like, why not take the time? But on another level, I kind of wished it was almost like they're all just kind of thrown together and they bounce off each other and I don't need to get caught up. But so in the end, I think, yeah, it'll probably be fine because it'll get that momentum over time. But that first episode, kind of slog, because the only thing in it that really is providing kind of action and drama is some clues about where Sigourney Weaver is going and the Iron Fist stuff, which isn't that interesting. So, yeah, I'm hoping it gets better. The Daredevil stuff is interesting, and Luke Cage and Jessica Jones are very interesting to me. So I'm happy to get more Jessica Jones, right? I think that was the best of the four shows that they've done.
Yeah, and I think for me, as being lukewarm on Daredevil, I felt like one of the side things that this new mashup project has done has made me like want to give that another chance. So.
Yeah, well, so here's the problem. The problem is that Daredevil, especially in season two, ends up being about the Hand, which also Iron Fist is about, which is this kind of like these ninjas that are, it's a poorly defined villain where it's like a James Bond organization in some ways, where it's just like a shadowy organization of bad people, and they seem to have a plan, but it's not entirely clear. They're just lots of ninjas. And that was the least interesting thing about Daredevil season two. And it is also apparently basically the plot of the Defenders is the same thing. And the Hand, as a teenager reading comics, the Hand was super boring. And I have not been, my mind has not been changed on that front with the Marvel Netflix show. So that's my concern. Hopefully, in the end, I guess the argument for the Defenders is, in the end, if it's much more about the fun and joy of seeing Luke and Jessica and Matt Murdock, Daredevil, and sure, okay, Iron Fist, whatever, bounce off of each other than it is about who the villain is, that's fine. And Sigourney Weaver is a very, you know, of course, it's Sigourney Weaver. So she's going to be interesting, even if the ninjas are not. In fact, there is a very funny scene in episode one where some ninjas get beaten up, and it's like they're just... it's not hard to beat up ninjas. Like, they're supposed to be. They look impressive. They're not impressive. They're really not good at their jobs. I think there are so many of them that their standards are really low. I think that must be what it is with ninjas.
Yeah, maybe that's it. There's just too many. The entree to the club is too easy. But
you only want A players, yeah, right? Isn't that what they say? You want the A level players. You don't want to bring in the C level ninjas, because then you got a few good ninjas, but you are surrounded by just terrible ninjas.
You can be killed
and
pretty easily.
They get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
They do. Get in the way. They just die.
Their actual volume gets. Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah, it's like White Walkers on or Whites on you know, zombie guys on Game of Thrones,
yep.
Right? Where it's like, you know, a few of them are really scary, but once there's 1,000 of them standing around, they're like, yeah, they're kind of easy to kill.
Yeah.
Turns out,
we can just, we'll torch these guys. But
yeah,
I think that I'm gonna when I continue to watch the series, I'm gonna see if Sigourney. I wonder if you keep watching, whether you think that Sigourney Weaver will add an element to the Hand that makes it a little more interesting.
I hope so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be much more Sigourney Weaver, or even Elektra, who I wasn't that particularly interested in, but in Daredevil, because she was sort of surrounded by Hand mythology, and I knew where that story was going. I think it helps a lot to personify these shadowy organizations, right? If you've got a good villain, why was Daredevil season one good? It was because Vincent D'Onofrio was such a good villain.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so if Sigourney Weaver can be the one who personifies this organization, and it's interesting to watch her, that it doesn't really matter that there are, you know, ninjas running around. It's more about the cat and mouse game with her. So
yeah,
that would be,
also their mythology seems very malleable.
Yeah,
let's put it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway,
I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. It's fun. It'll be interesting to see after this is all over where kind of the Marvel Netflix shows go and what they're planning on for future seasons, because this was their initial plan. This was the phase one of Marvel on Netflix, and then they have to go off from here to new paths with these characters. Mm-hmm. And wonder what that'll be like.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I give the mashup a thumbs up for I think breathing some life into most of them.
It's good. Mm-hmm. They're well made. I mean, that's the thing that I'm not entirely convinced that all of these superhero shows that are coming, including the Marvel shows, are going to be well made. The Netflix Marvel shows look good. They're definitely made with care, even when they're not at their best. They don't feel like cheap or embarrassing. They just sometimes feel like a misfire. And Iron Fist, I actually haven't seen all of Iron Fist. I've only seen the first three episodes of Iron Fist, and I am slowly going through that. And so far, it's not as bad as people say, but people just tell me to just keep watching episodes and I'll discover how it's not very good. So I guess I'll get there.
Yeah.
It seems fine now. Let's see, what else should we touch on? You had a couple of joint pieces with Feinbergs.
Mm-hmm. I did, two different Feinbergs.
Different Feinbergs, mm-hmm. Of course. You and Dan Feinberg, your colleague, TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, wrote a piece about the highs and lows of the summer of 2017. I don't know if there's anything you'd like to say about that other than, of course, Twin Peaks comes up. And it's not as a high. Well, yeah.
Yeah, that's
tough. Unless it's like you got to be high to appreciate Twin Peaks this summer. I don't know.
Speaking of shows that I'm falling behind on when I was determined.
I'm so far behind now on Twin Peaks.
It's really hard to hate watch. You know, in this environment, Pink TV, it's like, especially when I just cranked out 19 shows that I haven't watched that I want to watch.
Yeah.
It's tough to continue to watch one that I don't like.
And when the pace is deliberately slow and frustrating, it is just extra excruciating.
Yeah. It's tormenting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there's not much in that other than something that could be reflected in the 19 shows that I do want to watch from the summer, which is the three, I think the takeaway from our summer between Dan and I, the back and forth, is that, you know, the surprise of Get Shorty, which just got renewed today for a second season by Epix, Mr. Mercedes, and Unabomber, Manhunt Unabomber. Those are the big three summer surprises, and they all come from outlets that haven't traditionally been super successful in scripted, as far as giving something you have to watch this top tier. So, that to me is the trend for the summer.
And the other Feinberg, Scott Feinberg, and you did the Who Will Win, Who Should Win for the Emmys. Any overall thoughts here? I mean, I don't think we should walk through all of them.
No, not yet, because we'll do that after the Emmys. But my takeaway is that, well, I was surprised. I mean, he's he's more of a prognosticator, right? His job is to sort of pick who had a good Emmy campaign, which episodes did they submit. You know, the reason I could never do that job I can make picks, right? But I go against what I want to win or what I feel should win. So I find no joy in that, doing that. But I can't judge two or three episodes. I need to have a season full of something. I need to have value in the franchise of the series that I'm watching and wanting to pull for them. It's a little easier for dramatic performances for actors, but series overall, very tough. But you know, weirdly enough, he and I agreed on six of the categories, which is, I think, maybe our record for us. That's a lot. And because he definitely goes with the ones where he thinks, you know, I think this campaign worked. I think these people are going to offset each other and open the door here. And I'm just like, this is the best person, I think, in the category or the best show.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a contrast that I really like, because you've got the prognosticator and then the critic who's just saying, no, but this is the best person in the category.
Right.
And when they align, that's interesting too, right? It's like, oh, well, there's a chance that at least some of these things will go right.
Right. And it's, yeah. And it's tough too. Cause like the whole thing with when, you get into Big Little Lies and the acting categories there, you know, they're going to win. So it's, and I think Carrie Coon is amazing, but it put me in that's the only one category I did not like, because Carrie Coon's not nominated for The Leftovers and she's amazing in that. And she's much more upfront and powerful in that than she is amazing in Fargo, but she's part of a larger tapestry. Whereas the other two actresses who are super big named in Big Little Lies, they're going to win. So it's hard to sort of say, yay, Carrie Coon. But other than just sort of say, you know, she's great.
So what is coming up? I guess, are you doing the review of The Tick? Because that's coming out in a couple days on Amazon.
I am, yes. The interesting thing is I'm technically on vacation right now, so we'll see.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I'm on vacation for the next 2 weeks. And but I, you know, it's... I think Dan, who often has a lot on his plate, I think some of the, and Dan didn't really like the pilot, and some of the early reviews apparently are very positive on, I haven't seen any of those, are very positive on The Tick. And he knows that I like the franchise. I like the concepts of The Tick. You know, it's the one with Patrick Warburton was... You know, what definitely falls into my category. If I wish I had seen 5 seasons of that. So yeah, I think I'm having a more open attitude, which is why he gave it to me. But even though I thought, well, I'm on vacation, but I'm going to do it anyway. And everything that I've seen from it so far, I really like. So
okay,
I'm going to watch some more episodes. They gave me 6 total, so I'm going to try to get cranked through those and write that up tonight. It should be either tomorrow. It'll probably be in thr.com tomorrow. For people who are listening to this now or later.
I'm looking forward to it. We did an Incomparable episode actually 2 weeks ago. I'll put a link in the show notes, episode 366, where we talked about the original comics, which were satirical. In fact, this is a great tie-in. One of my favorite things about the original Tick comics is how they made fun of the Daredevil comics from that era with the hand and the ninjas. And they're like ninjas getting run over by cars, and ninjas are very stupid in the Tick. It's great. They pretend to be a hedge by standing next to a hedge and saying, I am a hedge. They're just, and I can't not watch Daredevil and think, oh, it's ninjas. The animated Tick series is a gem. It is amazing. It is amazing they got that thing on TV and that they were allowed to do 3 seasons on Saturday mornings on Fox, because it is really smart and weird and funny. And then the Patrick Warburton series, while super constrained by a sitcom budget, basically, is still weird and funny. And then this new one, what's really interesting about it is we live in an era where you can do superhero shows on TV for real and have special effects and things like that. And so then you put the tick in that context. And, you know, it's meant to be, he's a parody of a superhero, essentially. And it's, you're meant to, there are serious things in it, especially given the new Tick. It's all about kind of his sidekick Arthur having this really tragic backstory and a question about what's his grip on reality. Mm-hmm. But still, you know, I like the pilot, so I'm glad to hear that it's encouraging, because I've liked it in all of its forms. But this new one, also Ben Edlund, the guy who created the Tick back in the 80s as a kid, like a teenager, who wrote this comic for his local comic book shop in New England and has managed to keep the rights. He spent the last like 15 years as a staff writer on TV shows, basically so he could get to the point where he could run his own version of the Tick. Mm-hmm. So here we are. So I wish him luck. I hope it works out, because I love the character and I love the previous shows that they've done.
So. Yeah, it's I hope it has success too. So I'm happy for him.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I'm looking forward to that. That's on my stack along with the Defenders. Game of Thrones finale, by the way, is also on Sunday, the season finale.
I'm so excited.
I am too. We won't spoil it here, but I think next time we talk, we may have to talk about it and just warn people to hide during that part of the
that's
podcast
gonna be,
when we break it down a little bit.
That's going to be a tough one, because it's,
and then it goes away until it comes. It's also the one on Sunday is like the longest episode ever. It's like an hour and 20 minutes long or something, mm-hmm. hour and 15 minutes long. So it's where, and it sounds like next season, the whatever six episodes they're going to do are all going to be like movie length episodes, which I wonder why there are only six and why they wouldn't. Apparently this is how they want to do it. I'm ready for whatever they want to throw at
us. Yeah, at this point I am. And I am enjoying some of the, giving the side eye to some of the coverage of like, oh, it's the, but the tie-in element is out of sync.
Yeah.
And motivation. Well, like, okay, at this point.
I will say this. The most recent episode, they could have minimally thrown a bone at explaining exactly how a thousand or 2,000 miles a message could be run / flown on a raven while people are standing waiting to be saved. And like, they could have shown that time had passed a little bit more, or shown some magic something. Maybe the three-eyed raven sends a little message to the south to come, you need to help. Mm-hmm. But instead they're like, meh, whatever. And so I'm sitting there watching it going, really? Okay, I guess. It's just my thought was more not that they couldn't explain it away, but that they just didn't bother to explain it away. And it's like, come on, guys. You know, in the first season, it took people weeks, if not months, to go from place to place. And now it seems like they've got a cell phone, basically. Like, and if it's a magic cell phone, fine, show me the magic cell phone and I'll be happy.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But again, it's fine. I'm a little frustrated that there was probably something in there that it makes me wonder if they just cut something. They had some scene where they showed this thing, why it was taking the amount of time it was taking. And they're like, yeah, it's boring, we're going to cut it out. And I can support that. I get that it might be boring, but the final version, it just looks like they didn't care. Whatever.
Yeah. And I apparently some of the chatter from those who were making it are like, yeah, you can't really track time.
Yeah, it felt to me much more like they didn't want to bother portraying it over a long period of time, so they just didn't. Mm-hmm. And they're like, look, you know, just nobody pay attention to this. There was also in this penultimate episode, it felt like a lot of furniture moving. Like they're this is the episode where they move a bunch of stuff around in order to get what they want to have happen in the finale mm-hmm. to happen. And so it felt a lot less natural than most of the rest of the season has. It was not my favorite. It was probably my least favorite episode of the season, but I, you know, the fact is, like you say, this is the show that I make a point of watching as soon as it's out. And so in this case, as soon as I got back from my vacation, we watched it.
Exactly.
that was the first thing off the top.
Yeah. I've had two times where I haven't been able to watch the episode live, and I have gone to extraordinary lengths and twisting my back and every muscle contorted to actually be on Twitter as part of my job and not get caught up in spoilers. It's been very difficult, but I got through it without any major things. And I love it. Even that part where the time jump was just so like, okay, guys, you just kind of let that one go. It didn't lessen any of my enjoyment of the show. I loved the action parts of it.
It was just a moment of like, really? Mm-hmm. Isn't that far?
Yeah.
Isn't that supposed to be far? Well, I guess not. All right.
It's not. Yeah.
Okay.
And the funny thing is you could see it coming. Like, as soon as they said, send the raven, I was like, huh? Okay. That's like a fast raven.
Have a guy. Well, first, it's you. You look fast.
Yeah.
Run through the snow. And then send a raven. And then I'm imagining, like, because do the people on who do the show not know that ravens are birds and not like bullets or missiles? It's a bird. It just kind of flies at bird speed. That's a long... I don't know how fast the birds are in Westeros, but I don't think they're that fast.
Well, I think they've gotten faster every year, actually.
So they do. Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Well, that's, I think, the key phrase that people use is they travel at the speed of plot.
Yes.
And they wanted the story to be the way it was. And it's like, all right, it's got magic dragons in it. Whatever. It's
love fun. It.
Want to do a few quick letters?
Let's do that.
All right. Dean, our friend Dean in the 707, he said... Beside Game of Thrones, would any other TV show make national news if a hacker released episodes early? Maybe Walking Dead, maybe not.
I think it would be Walking Dead would be the one. I also think you would get national news if you did This Is Us.
Oh.
Because then you enter a lot of other more people. To, you know, theoretically, you're looking at, depending if you trust NBC's numbers... You're talking about, you know, 26 million people who could right. you know, have an interest in that. So that's something.
Only other thing I threw out there would be some sort of reality show that was pre-taped. Mm-hmm. And right now, I don't know if is The Bachelor all pre-taped? I don't know. It's whatever ones are in the ascendant, because something like American Idol back in the day, you know, nobody knew the ending because it was happening week to week. But something like Survivor or The Amazing Race, like the people involved all know who won. And I feel like if that was a leak for a show that was in the zeitgeist at the moment, that would be a big deal. But I'm not sure that show exists right now.
Yeah, I don't think there is on the reality side.
Because that would spoil everything. But let's see, what else? I forget who this is from, but it's FX. It's basically another $10 a month bill. Is FX now in subscription to? When will it end? We've talked about this before, but it is a... constant frustration. I get a lot of this in our email these days about all of these streaming services, and this is from MSW 117, and I think it's about this one's about Epics.
Oh, okay.
In particular, and Get Shorty. It's like another one.
Yes, but yeah. Still,
no, nobody's making you buy it. If you don't want to watch Get Shorty, then don't spend $10 a month.
Yeah, that's the thing. I struggle. I mean, I feel like here's what I can answer that from the standpoint of what they're feeling, and that is, I probably wouldn't, and given the other options, it's not
right
because I'm not a big fan of Berlin Station and Graves. So, you know, unless they had a whole lot more offerings. But that said, it's a great show, and it's so fun and so well done that you have to review it as is, not whether people can actually afford it at the time. That's a secondary issue in criticism.
Yeah, it's just the idea that you don't get access to everything and you have to make your own decisions there. And the show is good, but nobody's making you watch it. And we are rapidly, if we're not already there, we are rapidly reaching the point where nobody is going to be able to get access to everything. And you're just going to have to be a savvy shopper and you're going to have to choose. And yes, that means that you're going to hear positive reviews of shows. Some cord cutters are already there where it's like, oh, it's great, but I'm not going to watch that show for another year or two until it's available somewhere else. And that's just, it's going to keep happening. That's the world today. Alan, my nemesis in the 415.
Hello, Alan.
Oh, hello, Alan. He wrote in about power rankings. First, he says, if the power rankings have returned, can the riches be far behind?
Wow.
Get ready for the riches reunion.
Yeah, that is very unfair. That hurt. that really hurts.
And he said, in your comedy category, he said, to my taste, Rick and Morty is one of, if not the funniest and most creative comedies on the air. What do you think?
I just could not get into Rick and Morty. And I've talked to people about this new world we're in. And that to me, I've said this many times and whatever, but like, if I can't get into your show right off the bat, it's going to go on the back burner. And either I'm going to forget it entirely, or if there's this drumbeat somewhere else, whether it's criticized support or Gen Pop people who are like, oh my God, it's the best show ever. Okay, the drumbeat moves it into the list of 19 shows that I want to catch up on, but I haven't. But it doesn't make it like I'm going to start it tomorrow because, you know, this the same thing happened for me with BoJack Horseman. The first handful of episodes, I just really struggled with. I know it's apparently significantly better after that, but I just couldn't with that. And maybe it was mood. Comedy is a lot about mood, but Rick and Morty, I couldn't do it.
Let's see. Stanford Steph and Jason Berry both wrote in to say, just as a PSA, The Good Place, excellent, excellent show, now on Netflix.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen The Good Place yet and you have Netflix, go and watch it. It's very good. And it's, I think, 10 episodes. So it's not even 10 half-hour episodes, but you will really enjoy it. It's very good.
Yes, absolutely. Get on that one. It's fun.
John in St. Paul, Minnesota wrote in to say, this is a 651, by the way.
Ooh.
Should I watch The Defenders if all I've seen is Jessica Jones?
Yeah, I think so. Then you'll be welcome up to like, who is this white guy slowing everything down? But if you get to the third episode, then you'll kind of be like, you'll be really going with it. I mean, Luke Cage is a really good character.
Yeah, you may see Luke Cage and well, I mean, you've already seen Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, right? It's like then you're going to be reminded that maybe you should watch that show that Luke Cage is in,
right? By himself. I think they work great together. Yeah.
Let's see what else we have here. Cliff in the 504 wrote in saying, thanks for the discussion about new business models for television. I'm puzzled by advertisers' willingness to pay for anything other than live viewing. So this is about like Live Plus 3 and Live Plus 7, unless it's on a streaming service like Hulu where you have to watch the commercials. A vast majority of my family's TV viewing is on DVR. We fast forward past every commercial. TiVo's commercial skip feature means we don't even see that blur of images at 4x speed or whatever. When watching shows on the same night as they air, we usually delay viewing a few minutes so we can skip the commercials. Even when we watch live sports, if it's not a playoff game, we often delay the start. So what benefit do advertisers get from our viewing? Why are they willing to play for Live Plus X? That's a good question.
It is. They're not always, you know, yeah, I mean, they're willing to pay less for non, you know, not live, you know, Live Plus same day, which is 24-hour period. They'll pay less in the Live Plus 3 and less for Live Plus 7, but money is money, and so you have to cobble it together a little bit at a time. And now the networks have basically said this summer, which I thought was revelatory, that they are monetizing digital well beyond the L7, with some of them showing ratings out to L35. So that's amazing to me. So that's, once you get past 7, you're in no man's land as far as like history of being able to monetize it. But if they're actually getting pennies on the dollar way out to 35, maybe that's something. Yeah, there's different ways that they can do it. You know, there's like, obviously they can, when you come to a show later on the website or on Netflix, they can put in, or not Netflix, because you're not paying, you know, well, I guess you would be not getting on there, but maybe still on. Does Hulu still have ads? I can't even remember.
There are two versions. There's a version with and a version without.
Yeah, so you can pop in the, you know, you can pop out the old ads that were promoting movies, and you can pop in new ones that are timely and to the, you know, area code specific, all that kind of stuff. So how they're actually doing it beyond that, I don't know. The point about the TiVo one, I think what they're doing is saying that most people do not actually have a TiVo. So there have been studies, particularly from a company that Nielsen bought that was based in the Bay Area in Berkeley. And they said that even if you fast forward on a power of three TiVo, that's how old it was, this company still exists, that you are retaining up to 75% of the ad in your brain, though you don't think you are. And now you hear advertisers in these panels saying that people are slowing down ads and replaying them, and then that makes that ad more valuable or whatever. It's, you know, I think a lot of it is magical thinking, but it's not for us to really worry about, right?
Yeah, I do wonder if there's some percentage that they have that they know, like this percentage of DVR viewers doesn't skip.
Yeah.
And that they press play and then they treat it as live. And we might all of us with podcasts and things might say, who are those people? But those people probably exist. I have people in my family who have DVRs, and their relationship with the DVR is pretty dodgy, but they do use it. But they use it like a VCR kind of, and they just kind of press play. And maybe they advance through the commercials and maybe they don't. And I don't know. It seems weird to me, and it does seem like that's a house of cards. And eventually they're going to not care if it's DVR'd, you know, past today, like forget about it. But we've said this before on this podcast, once you get them in a digital platform, they can't skip anymore, right? That's the brilliance of getting them to say, well, you can watch it anytime on the CW app,
right?
Is the CW app can make you watch commercials and you can't skip. So then they got you. And that's what they're doing, is making that you know, yeah, if you pay for cable, then you can DVR it and you can skip it. But if you're just watching on a stream and you're not paying enough to have the commercials go away, too bad. You got to watch them.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And I have actually sat in where they've said that there are people who don't have the capacity to fast forward and don't. And I actually, not more than several, at least 7 years ago, I actually witnessed a family have something pre-recorded and not suit the channel. And I was apoplectic. I'm like, what are you doing? You've already taped this. You have a remote. Fast forward through these commercials. It was insanity to me, but I saw it firsthand.
Let's go to Karen in the 530. That's the foot of Mount Shasta.
Ooh, nice.
Mm-hmm. She says, my DVR and watch lists are filled with programs and good intentions. My life is lacking in free time. Can you assist me, Tim, in curating the following list? What should I watch first and what should I skip? Here's the list. American Gods, Handmaid's Tale, Catastrophe, Stranger Things, and Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. So first off, anything in there that's skippable?
Skippable is a tough one. So let's move on to the order.
Yeah, okay.
Handmaid's
Tale first.
Yep. Give me the list again, sorry.
American Gods, Catastrophe, Stranger Things, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Yeah, so Catastrophe second, and Stranger Things third, and Kimmy Schmidt last, probably.
All right.
But you got like you have to watch, you just have to watch Handmaid's Tale. So that's essential.
You
and you have to watch Catastrophe because it's so easy to do and you can get through it. In fact, they work well. I think you and I might have talked about this. I'm not sure. They work well as together. So you watch one episode of Handmaid's Tale and you get severely depressed and then you put Catastrophe in and you laugh and then you go vice versa.
That is the way to do it. I agree completely. Mm-hmm. Here's one from Martha from the 925. A few months back, people wrote in about shows they couldn't find to stream. Do you know about these? And I did some research here.
Okay.
This just in. I did some research.
Nice. Research has been done.
She provided me with a list of four shows. Life on Mars, the original UK version.
Oh, yeah.
Ashes to Ashes, which was the follow-up mm-hmm. to Life on Mars.
Yep.
MI5, mm-hmm. which was called Spooks in the US. Mm-hmm. And Homicide, or called Spooks in the UK and MI5 in the US.
Yep.
Because of horrible racist terms that can't be used in show names in the US.
Right.
That's what it is. And Homicide, Life on the Street.
Oh, yeah.
And also Martha says, if you ever do a Chronicle podcast reunion, please remember to mention Peter Hartlob's cousin. Of course. Every time I talk to Peter Hartlob on Twitter, I want to mention his cousin, just because.
I saw Peter Hartlob's cousin in Los Angeles. How about that? It's a modern day phenomenon.
Oh, mm-hmm. Amazing. Anyway, thank you for this magnificent podcast and keeping at least one BART commute tolerable. Martha, unfortunately, here's my answer to your question. Only Life on Mars is available and streaming anywhere, as far as I can tell. I looked at Fan TV and it didn't have any of these as listed, but I went to Acorn and I went to BritBox because three of these four series are British, and BritBox has Life on Mars.
Oh.
So if you want to watch Life on Mars, if you want to visit or revisit that, BritBox is the place to do it. I look at MI5 and Ashes to Ashes and think, at some point, Acorn and BritBox is going to pick up all of these things if they can, because these are like acclaimed British shows. They got to find their way to a streaming service somewhere, and it's more likely, since they're older, that it's going to be to a niche service like BritBox or Acorn than it's going to be to Netflix.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, go get thee to BritBox. For
interesting
some John Sim 70s
so good.
That's a great show.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if I've got a nice letter to end on here. Oh no, there's more nemesis. I'm gonna go with Tobias from the +49.
Oh, Tobias Funke.
Probably not. You never know. When planning our trip to the +44, my wife and I didn't think of TV rights, so we were quite surprised in opening Netflix on our iPad to find different shows. That's not great because we wanted to see shows Netflix apparently only has the rights to in Germany, but it's understandable, and we get the bonus of watching movies and shows we couldn't watch at home. Now, what do you think happens when we open Amazon Prime in the UK? The same thing? No, Amazon only gives us access to the shows licensed in both countries, so it's mainly their own shows. I can understand the streaming services not being able to show us the German content because of rights, but do you have an idea why Amazon doesn't show their British content for us? Are Amazon DE and Amazon.co.uk different companies? I can't think of any other explanation. I think that's true. I think Amazon structures their companies a little bit different, so I think that may be why, but I think this is a great point that people discover, which is it's really stupid. I get why they do it. They do it for piracy reasons and trying to get out of your region. But like if I'm a Netflix US customer and I'm on a vacation in Germany and I want to watch that show from the US, I should be able to do that with my account because I'm an American customer to Netflix. But you can't. It doesn't work like that. When you're in Germany, you only get to see what's available on Netflix in Germany. If you want to watch HBO Go outside of the US, good luck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get geotagged.
And it's frustrating because it's like, I'm your customer from the US. I'm just traveling. And at this point, they don't care, I think, because of exactly this issue, the idea that you could be German and sign up for an American Netflix account and then get all of the Netflix stuff. I knew people who did that back before Netflix was available overseas. That is absolutely what they did. They got a Netflix account in the US and just watched it.
Yeah.
And now you have to use a VPN basically or some other kind of unblocker to do that.
Yeah.
It's frustrating though. Right?
Your stuff, it's just the
your stuff scourge. should come with you. Also, there's downloads. The other thing I'll point out, because this came up with, again, a bunch of friends going on vacations and me going on a vacation, wanting to download stuff because Amazon and Netflix will let you pre-download shows to watch when you're away from good internet, which happens when you travel a lot. One of the interesting things, though, the Marvel shows on Netflix are not downloadable. None of them. So the Defenders came out, and I had several friends who were like, oh, I want to pre-download those. Nope, you can't do it. So that's another little quirk. Mm-hmm. And HBO, I found that out too. I was at a place with good Wi-Fi, and I wanted to download Game of Thrones to watch the next day at a place with bad Wi-Fi. Couldn't do it because you can't download the shows there. You can only stream them.
Interesting.
So that's another complexity here. I think it'll all get worked out eventually, but yeah, this digital world we're moving into for TV, it's not perfect.
A lot of rules, a lot of shifting rules.
A lot of rules. Mm-hmm. That's true. Yay. Well, I think we've done enough damage for this episode, don't you?
I think we did. Yes. We it was a chunk of damage.
We nailed it. Well, maybe not.
No, I'm not sure we ever do.
We finished. Yeah, actually that was okay, I'm going to bring it in then. One last letter, which is the specifically about this show, which is back to Dean, who asks, do you know whether a TVTM episode is gold or mold halfway through?
What's your take?
I think not. I'm often worried while I'm doing a podcast about whether it's any good or not. I'm always thinking about that. But what ends up happening to me, and I'm interested to see what you think, I will step away. Like, I'll post the episode or even before I've edited it, I'll step away for a minute and do something else. And I'll think, sometimes it will just pop in there. I'll be like, you know, that was pretty good. Once it's all done and I've left and we're done and then I walk away. Sometimes I think that. Other times I don't. But sometimes I do. So the gold. Every now and then I do one of that. And then other times I think nothing of it. And then the tweets come in and people are like, oh, that was a really great episode. And I'll be like, oh, I guess that was a good one.
And you're like, so, oh, was it? Oh, was it really?
Great to hear. Great to hear when that happens. But
oh, they're all gold.
Yes. Yeah. Well, now I'm clearing out my backlog of letters. We went through that period where we didn't do letters because you were in residence, and then I went on a trip, and I just came back and read some letters kind of badly because I didn't get to prep. We're calling it quits. Like, new letters need to come in. So please email us podcast@tvtalkmachine.com or tweet at us @TVTM. You can also go on our Facebook group, facebook.com/TVTalkmachine. I haven't been there in a couple of weeks, so my apologies, Facebook people. I'll be there soon.
Nice.
And I think that's about it.
Yeah, that's it.
All right. Well, thanks to everybody out there worldwide. Simultaneously, we thank you all for listening to the TV Talk Machine. And are we back next week? Are you going to be back? Are you around?
Let's say it's a loose yes. Because I'm on vacation, but I think I'm going to be around. A loose yes. Those are the best.
All right. So, everybody, we may see you next week. It's a cliffhanger.
Send a raven.